everyone, real quick before we get into the show, want to tell you guys about our NFL 365 product on rotoexperts.com. You get access to my Davis Maddox rankings for dynasty and seasonal. You get access to our best ball tools and the season-long projections powered by the Daily Roto Projection Engine, where we project from the team level down. You can get a 10% discount by using the promo code AMICO, AMICO, on rotoexperts.com today. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Roto Experts Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. In this episode, I am joined by Anthony Amico, also from rotoexperts.com. He is on board with the NFL 365 package. And we are here today to talk about some NFL draft prospects and some of our combine revelations. Anthony, welcome to the show.
What's up, man? It's I feel like it's been a while since we've produced any like audio or video content together. So this is pretty nice.
Well, you came on. You've been on the Swolecast, right?
Yeah.
And I know we used to do RotoViz Radio together too back in the day.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but it has been a while since we've been on a show together, I think.
Yeah. So it's the band is back together, and you know that the takes are coming. So
the takes are definitely coming. The first place I want to start with takes, especially if we're going to be talking about the combine, is what is DK Metcalf to you? Because I actually think you and I have differing opinions on him.
Yeah, so I'm kind of changing my tune because I feel like the first 4 months of like draft stuff, going back to like the end of the regular season into now, like I was kind of anti-Metcalf, like, because I was just like, oh, like the production kind of sucks. Like, we see dudes like this happen all the time. They never work out. But I've been diving like a little bit deeper into the numbers. And, you know, this season he played A.J. Brown basically to a draw before he got hurt. I think the injuries are like by far like the most scariest thing with him, because, I mean, he's been hurt like two or three times in a pretty major way already. So that worries me, but like
pretty big red flag.
Yeah. And maybe the Mike Williams thing, like him, like kind of working out is skewing my opinions on that, but I'm just hoping that like those things are really random. He is just like an absurd physical freak. And I know that like the agility scores, like he's like the only guy I've ever heard of that like won the combine and lost the combine in the same weekend. Like, crushed the 40, 4.33 at like this ridiculous height. You know, he's like this ridiculous height adjusted, you know, speed athlete. But then the agility sucked. So it's like people are really torn on it. I'm kind of in the camp now where like I think he has risk, obviously. And I think you need to, if you're like pro Metcalf, you need to be aware of those risks. But I still think that his upside is like legitimately really high. And just like as a player, like he can do like two or three things right now at like a pretty high level. So I am not as down on him as I think I would have been maybe like 3 years ago. And I'm trying to just be like really open-minded about him like through the process.
Like 4 years ago, I would have been like, this dude is the best wide receiver in the history of football. We're taking him at number 5 overall. He should go to the Raiders at 4. The Packers should trade up for him. And now I think that I tend to base my opinions a lot more on productivity and breakout age, just because as we've learned more and more about wide receiver evaluations, like I think people sort of get that mistaken. You know, even 5 years ago was really the wild, wild west in terms of analyzing wide receiver prospects. Like the idea of market share 5 years ago was a brand new idea. And, you know, a lot of the things that people were judging wide receivers on for a long time was just, can they beat this 40-time threshold and can they beat these weight thresholds? And that was really about it. So there are a couple things with Metcalf. First, I think his style of wide receiver is actually going out of style. If you look at who the super elite NFL wide receivers are now, you're looking at guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, Odell Beckham, guys who are a little bit shiftier, guys who move laterally a little bit better. And so, for example, I think a hot take I have on this draft is if I was an NFL team, I would rather draft Paris Campbell for whatever he costs than DK Metcalf for whatever he costs, just because I think Campbell is a player who can do more of what NFL teams are doing that's working right now.
Well, we were saying the other day on Twitter that we think Paris Campbell is a running back, not a receiver. So that's
He's like both though. He's like, right? Like there's no reason he can't be a running back and a slot wide receiver. Like he's like a better Theo Riddick.
Yeah, I probably agree with that, but I think he's like a worse Curtis Samuel, and I don't think teams have like figured out yet how to like use Curtis Samuel the best way. I mean, maybe it's just like the 18 turners that are in Carolina. But yeah, I mean, like I'm cool with that player archetype. I'm just not really sure. Like, I just think it's different things. Like, I think Metcalf could still be like a faster version of Mike Evans, or.
But how tall was Metcalf though?
I think like 6'3" and.
Yeah, Mike Evans is like
6'5".
Yeah, he's like 6'5".
But yeah, I mean, you just kind of have to know like what you're getting into. Like the thing that drives me nuts about a lot of this evaluation is like people are like, oh, well, like if his agility sucks, like he can't run all the routes. And it's like, well, like, I don't know, like how much football do you watch where like every receiver runs every route? It doesn't really happen. So like, I do agree with you that like the stone nuts guys are the ones that are playing like in the slot and outside, getting mismatches, like they're quick. I'm totally with all that, but I still think that there's a place in the league for guys like Metcalf if he can, you know, prove that he's like a legit
receiver. Of course there's a place in the league. It's not like Metcalf isn't an NFL player. I just think that I mean, the fact that when Brown and Metcalf played together this last season, Brown had 38 receptions. Metcalf had only 19. That should be like, I think probably a pretty big flag that Brown is probably like a more useful NFL player, at least immediately.
Yeah. But if you look at what they did on those plays, like Metcalf was way more explosive. Like in terms of yards, they were.
Yeah. Metcalf really is like the down the field guy, no doubt.
Yeah. So like, I don't really like looking at things like just through raw receptions and stuff in college, because, you know, like Brown is doing a lot of stuff over the middle, and he's not making like a lot of big plays, and Metcalf is averaging, you know, like an absurd amount of like yards per target or yards per catch. So it's like, you know, when you connect with Metcalf, like those plays are so high EPA, like versus what Brown's doing, you know, you have to kind of factor that in.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. And what, Metcalf is younger too, right?
Yeah, but not by much. Like I think I actually have that in front of me. So Metcalf at the end of the season was 21. Oh no, Brown is and Brown was 21.5. So about 6 months difference between them, which is like somewhat significant, you know, in the scope of like the basic, like the normal range of ages. But Brown had like a breakout age in terms of like the 30% dominator, and Metcalf's never done that. So that does tend to be kind of important. But I do think also like, you know, if you reverse their situations this year, like Metcalf would have done that, you know, like if all of a sudden A.J. Brown got hurt. That's where like I'm trying to be open-minded is like when you have like two like round one receivers on the same team, it's it becomes really tricky. Like you saw that.
And DeMarcus Lodge probably going to get drafted.
Yeah, maybe even like on day two. So it's really tricky. I think that those kinds of situations are very, very dangerous for the stats guys, because, you know, we're just looking at things as if it's all apples to apples, and we're like, oh, like, you know, we use market share, we're making it apples to apples because everything's on percentages, but you still have to factor in the context of the competition.
I think if Metcalf goes to like a pretty bad offensive coach, like I think it's going to be kind of rough for him. Like I think if he goes somewhere where they like don't ask, you know who he could end up having a career like, and they don't play the same at all. The Raiders wide receiver, Denarius Moore, where literally he was so good on nine routes and bubble screens, and then like teams just took that away and he had nothing left. I think that could happen to Metcalf.
Well, it also really wouldn't surprise me if he had like the Kelvin Benjamin rookie season where like he's just getting fed because he's a high first round pick, and then like in 5 years we're like, wow, this guy actually kind of sucks. And you know, he ends up kind of flaming out. Like, I could see that happening too. Like, I guess my point is, like, even if he's bad, he could still have like that really good first year.
Right.
Like productivity.
Yeah. Paris Campbell though, do you think that he, I don't think he's a first round pick, but like, I you know who a good comp for him is like Tarik Cohen, but like a little bit sturdier.
Yeah, you're going to have to sell me on this one, actually, because like the other guys of this kind of archetype, I feel like even coming out of Ohio State, like Curtis Samuel to me was like a way better prospect of like a similar archetype.
Yeah.
So like you got to sell me on Campbell as being like better than that. I mean, I guess like in the context of this draft class, maybe he ranks higher, but I just I don't know. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he was like a productive football player. I just don't really buy it as like a guy you're ever going to want to play in the fantasy context.
Well, I mean, I guess, and I mean, Curtis Samuel though, we saw it. I guess we started to see with the Panthers last year, they started to run stuff for him, right? They started to design stuff for him. And I mean, I guess the thing that I would use to sell you on Paris Campbell would be, I think that his type of player is now so in vogue that whatever team drafts him is going to draft him with that stuff in mind. Like, it's not going to be like 5 years ago, Dexter McCluster, I guess maybe even longer than that now. That's how long I've been doing this. But like, however long Dexter McCluster came out, like that style of player then was like, you'd project him for like 70 touches over the course of a year. But now a player that's like doing jet motion and, wide receiver reverses and screens and bubbles, like that type of, that guy could get 150 touches in a year. And that's a meaningful difference.
For sure. I do think that, I guess like in general, I want to like try to avoid though, like making these like comparisons where we're picking like the one player where like these things, or the one or two players where these things work out. Like, he could still be like D'Anthony Thomas. You know what I mean? Like, D'Anthony Thomas still played with Andy Reid and was still basically like a bit player. You know, like he was fast. He could run. He could catch. But he still wasn't going to ever get like 150 touches just because like he wasn't good enough. So like, it's possible Paris Campbell is like.
But Paris Campbell is also, he's also 6 feet tall and also weighs 205 pounds. So
For sure.
He's not a tweener. Like, and also I think he could just straight up be a slot wide receiver too. Like, if you just told me he just became what people thought Andy Isabella was going to be, I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I can buy that. I'm just a little more worried because I think, like, unlike a guy like Metcalf, like, there really wasn't any competition at Ohio State. Like, I don't think Terry McLaurin's really that good. I don't think that – I mean, they have, you know, probably either first or second quarterback off the board this year in Haskins. Like, it's just – you would have expected, I think, a little bit more production this year, I guess, is what I'm saying.
So, your boy Greg Dortch, where's he at in the hierarchy of wide receivers now that we saw how good all of these guys were at the combine?
Dude, I don't know. I'm I still haven't seen a reason why he didn't perform at the combine. Like, I still haven't found out why he didn't participate. My assumption is that, like, he just didn't think he'd do well, so he's waiting for the pro day. I'm a little worried. I mean, because the guy still has to get drafted on like day two to like have a reasonable chance at being successful. The numbers are just so good. Like, 36% dominator rating this year. I mean, for his career, he's been awesome. Career dominator, 39%. Like, dude is a baller, has production in the run game, has production in the return game. Like, that's the guy. Like, that's the guy coming into this draft where I was like, man, like, he's the one that like can do hashtag all the things.
And 173 pounds is small.
It is small, but like the number of guys who get drafted, the number of guys who've like been drafted historically at that weight is not very big, but it's like growing for the reasons that you said before. And there are like productive players in the history of the league that are like within that range of weight. Like,
well, you're really high on Marquise Brown, right?
Stone love. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. He just makes
crazy plays. He makes crazy explosive plays.
I can't come up with a good final grade or judgment on him. Yeah, he was amazing in Oklahoma, and he is just kind of always open, and he's incredibly fast, but if you know, if he weighs 165 pounds or something, I don't know, man.
That's not his real weight, though. I mean, you have to factor in, like, he just had surgery. He's got a lot of atrophy. Like, muscle weighs more than fat. Like, that's a guy, like, once he's healthy and he's in a weight room, like, he could easily be 180. Like, I don't buy that he's 160, 165. Like, I don't think that there's any way that's what he actually weighs. I just don't think that, like, basic, like, biology dictates that, like, your weight, like, a month after surgery is your weight.
No, I mean, I guess, yeah, like, that has to be fair. But I think this wide receiver class is so strong now that Brown is going to kind of get left out as a result of that. Like, N'Keal Harry and Hakeem Butler and A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf. And then, like, that's not even to count the guys who were amazing at the combine who are going to get drafted now, who, like Miles Boykin would not have been drafted before, and he's going to be a round five pick now.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's really funny, too, because I feel like before – the season, everyone was like, oh, like, you know, 2019 wide receivers are going to suck, like, not a good class. And it's just, like, just shows, like, how little we know, because it's pretty good. Even if we don't get, like, a ton of really good, like, fantasy guys, definitely a lot of really good, like, NFL producers or contributors are going to be found. And Harry is, like, really good. Like, he's the nuts, I think.
I think the only two that I could see joining the – you know, 10-year wide receiver, like the Julio Jones, AJ Green, Mike Evans tier of player. I see that upside for Metcalf for sure. And I see that upside for Hakeem Butler. And if Arcega-Whiteside was, a, you know, 10% faster, I would say that for him. But he's like, JJ Arcega-Whiteside is like motivated to play football, Kelvin Benjamin.
That's not a terrible comp, honestly, but I also don't think that guy could be a bad football player. I mean, he is like people talk about it, like, you know, boxing out defenders and stuff in the red zone. Like, he literally does that. Like, you watch him play, like, not to be like, oh, watch the tape Twitter, but like, he actually, like, you watch him, you actually see him, like, boxing out the corner and just, like, high-pointing the ball.
No, we can admit to watching the tape on this podcast. I watch every time I write up one of these prospect profiles for the site, I do go through and watch a couple games for all of the players.
Yeah, I mean, you want to know, like, you want to have an idea of, like, where they win. And it's also just, like, pretty fun to see, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, Arcega-Whiteside, though, I actually mocked him in the first round just because I think he's, like, you know who Hayden Winks is? He writes for RotoWorld. He's been doing these analytical pieces where he just basically contextualize all the stats that the guys do in college, you know, no combine stuff, no film stuff at all, just analytics, and basically ranked, like, Arcega-Whiteside's final season at Stanford was the most impressive from, like, a market share and yards per target in all of college football this last season.
Yeah, I mean, he was really good. 2.75 receiving yards per team pass attempt, 45% dominator rating. The dude was a total stud, and he scored a bunch of touchdowns. And, like, 2018 Stanford is probably, like, the worst version of Stanford in the past, like, decade. You know, from the quarterback on down. So that I think makes it even more impressive.
Yeah, and he has the, you know, the young breakout age, 19.
20. Oh, you have him at 19. I have him at 20. What do you use for breakout age? I use 30% dominator. I don't know.
I just used whatever player profiler.
So, okay, yeah. I think they
what
use
I, 20. What I actually do is if you started for your team and you were good, so, like, if you started for your college football team as a freshman and you had 30 receptions, like, I don't care if you didn't have, like, I don't care if you didn't dominate the offense, but if you were a true freshman for a Power 5 school and you played, like, yeah, I'll count that. Or, like, conversely, like, if you were a redshirt freshman and didn't play even your redshirt freshman year, I don't care if you have a sick redshirt sophomore year, I'm going to downgrade you for not being able to play for basically 2 years for a college team. Like, I'll factor stuff like that in.
Yeah, I think people miss that, especially when they look at, like, the career numbers. It's like, oh, well, his career dominator or his career, like, market share isn't as good. Well, yeah, but, like, he sat out his freshman year when, like, this other guy was playing. And obviously those situations are not nearly as profitable for younger players. So in terms of, like, breakout age with the 30% dominator, the best guys, at least, like, of the names are Dortch, Harry, Whiteside, Keyshawn Johnson, and then after that, it's kind of like who's who. I mean, there's like a couple other guys that like aren't really going to get drafted, then like Penny Hart, AJ Brown. So it's
why did Whiteside not get? Did he just not get invited to the combine?
No, he was invited. He was invited. He just didn't participate. Again, I'm not really sure.
Oh, that's not good. That means he's slow.
Stiff. But I think people thought that already, so I don't really think that.
I don't like that. Guys choosing to not run at the combine, that's a red flag to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing I've been saying with the Metcalf thing. It's like, well, he could have just not done the agility drills, and you guys would all probably think he wasn't agile anyway. So
that makes me think that Whiteside's 40 is like 4.7. Because I think even a 4.65 at his size would have been fine. So I think his advisors were watching him run and being like, dude, you can't put these numbers out there for people to see.
You're worried he's like Auden Tate, like just like
I'm worried he's just like slow. Yeah. Which doesn't really show up when you watch him though.
It's hard because we're not really sure like how fast
the defenders are. Yeah. Yeah. You know who had a good combine but looks horrible when you watch him, does not look comfortable playing football, is Boykin. He did not impress me when I watched.
No, yeah. I mean that's a mistake to me. That's a mistake teams are gonna make this year. Like who are Notre Dame's marquee players on offense, you know? Like if you can't produce there,
I will say his season this last year was the best year of any wide receiver they've had since Will Fuller was there.
Sure, but Will Fuller was like a stud. Like he had like the 40% dominator type stuff.
Yeah, Will Fuller had a crazy, I don't know. Like I'm sure a guy like Boykin has a role in the NFL and he proved to be athletic enough, but he just like didn't look super comfortable doing anything. Like I guess catching like contested catches and stuff, he was good, but like running and moving laterally, he did not look great to me.
Right. So I don't know. I have concerns. Like I don't like to draft. That's where like I think the combine gets overblown, right? Like we want to know how athletic these guys are, but we can't just like all of a sudden change the profile. Like you were saying at the top of the show, you're like, people weren't even going to draft Miles Boykin, you know, 2 weeks ago. Now he might go like on day two or like early day three. Like that's like a huge overreaction to me.
Depends on how much NFL teams value this combine stuff. You know, we never really know. Some teams make it apparent that they do. Some teams say that they don't. I think it would be a mistake to disregard a lot of the stuff. Like athletic testing, I think clearly matters. And you know where it always ends up mattering is like the edges. Like the edges who have a sick combine always get boosted.
100%. I think just in general, this may be like a reach of a comment. I have not researched this, but like in general, I just feel like it's way more important to be athletic on defense than on offense because like on offense, you know everything that's going on. So like if you're really smart and you're really strong in terms of your technique, like you can be a productive offensive player. But on defense, it's like you're just, especially now, like you just spend the whole game chasing people. So like if you're not athletic, you're just going to get killed. And I actually was looking up, I was doing some work with some Spark stuff the other day. And I mean, you do get like a pretty significant multiplier if you just like use like a 121 or like 125 like Spark threshold. Like the drop off is significant in terms of like guys below that and guys above that. So it's pretty clear to me, I think, that you need those guys to be athletic.
Yeah, I mean it sounds pretty reasonable to me. You know who did themselves the biggest favor for me is
Butler.
Butler. Butler is I think there's an outside chance that he goes before Harry, and he is wide receiver 2 for me in my post-combine rankings that I am going to get up on the site tomorrow.
Yeah, I can't – I'm having trouble figuring him out because, like, he didn't do anything until this year. Like, he didn't break out until this year.
I have a very good take as to why that is.
Go ahead.
He was not recruited by – the head coach at Iowa State. He was recruited by a different coach who got fired, and then he chose to stay at Iowa State with a different coach. And so the new coach, and I believe the new coach recruited Alan Lazard. And so as a result, You know, and I guess I would need to go fact check and see if the current Iowa State head coach is the guy who recruited Lazard. But I think one potential explanation for why Butler did not really play until this season was that he was not recruited by the head coach he played under.
That would make some sense. And I actually forgot that Lazard went there. Like, Lazard was just so bad this year, I like forgot that he even existed. And like, well, that was someone last year I was like, oh, like, pretty
well,
good.
Butler killed the combine, and crushed. Lazard did the exact opposite. So people who don't know, Allen Lazard was a very big bodied Iowa State wide receiver, actually shorter than Butler, but same weight, but ran, you know, a slow 40, horrible agility score, DK Metcalf level agility score. So
yeah, Butler's agility may still be bad. Like, he didn't do the drills.
Yeah.
So that kind of tells me he's probably not agile, but like, he's definitely like catch point, you know, contested catches, can make plays. And he obviously like tested way faster than I think people expected. 4.48 is like really, really tough to do at 6'5", 227. So I'm definitely trying to vibe on him more. I just want to see where he drafted. I'm just kind of confused, I guess, by him, but like, the overall profile does look pretty good. When you ignore like the age component, the age thing is kind of like the only thing holding it back.
Pretty good run after the catch ability from him too. Like, he was pretty good at that at Iowa State, which I always love to see that.
Yeah, especially in a big guy.
Yeah. Final thoughts on Andy Isabella.
Oh, love, stone love. He still has the top success probability in my success probability model, which I'm actually still trying to figure out why that is, because he's not like – I mean, I guess I kind of know why. It's because his receiving yards per team pass attempt this year was, like, outrageous. So, like, this stat hasn't been used too much. I was talking about it with JJ, Zach Reason, maybe, like, a week or two ago. But if you just take, like, a receiver's receiving yardage and divide it by the number of team passing attempts, that statistic is – probably, like, if you were just to say, like, what's the one receiving statistic that's the most correlated with success, like, that would be it, at least in the testing that I've done. So him at 4.33 is really, really outrageous. Like, there's only, like, a handful of guys in my database since, like, 2003 that have been better, and, like, half of those guys went to Georgia Tech, where it's just, like, all downfield throws. So Isabella, productivity-wise, is, like, a unicorn. The age is decent, like 21 age breakout. He's 22 now. The film guys seem to be like kind of split on him, but he still grades out pretty well. And obviously ran in the 4.3s. Like, the combine for him, like, kind of matched what we expected. And obviously there was like that one period, because his first 40 was like messed up by the laser. So everyone was like freaking out because he ran like a 4.5, and it was like, oh no, like, it's over. Like, it's just over like that. But his official time was in the 4.3s, and I think it totally adds up. I think he's going to be really good. Like, I have him at 65% probability of success from a fantasy perspective. And
where is that going to go if he's drafted in the sixth round, though?
I mean, that's going to change a ton, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I think players
like him do not get drafted high.
Why? Tajay Sharp got drafted pretty high, and Andy Isabella is like way better than Tajay.
Where did Tajay Sharp get drafted? I don't, like, third round?
Nah, maybe now that I'm thinking about it.
I'm going to look
right now because I have to know this.
Here, I got it right here. Loading. This
round
is great
five,
radio.
Yeah. Round
yeah.
Five.
Yeah, and, like, I think that's a pretty reasonable expectation.
I just think Isabella's way better. And the speed, like, I don't know. I think he's going to go in the third round. But if I'm wrong, that's definitely going to hurt him.
That would be the high – I'm sure that would be the highest, like, a 5'10", wide, like, small school wide receiver has ever been drafted. I just don't think there's any way. Like he just does not fit the – because really when you're drafting a wide receiver – You want to tell yourself a story of him becoming a stud, right?
Sure.
And Andy Isabella will never be a game changing. Like, he'll never change your offense. He will always just fit whatever you're already doing, I think.
All right, I'm gonna argue with you on this because I don't see what differentiates Andy Isabella from like Dante Pettis last year. outside of the fact that like Andy Isabella is
isn't Pettis like 6'1"?
Probably taller, yeah. But I don't think their weights. I don't think that their weights are like massively different.
Well, I mean, height matters with how you're projecting guys, because you can't and not just for height, but like arm length, like wingspan, because you can't have like 5'10 wide receivers running routes against 6'3 corners and like throw them passes on the interior, because it's too like it's too easy for defenders to get their bodies and get their arms in the way without getting called for pass interference on those, especially if they're running routes from the slot.
I mean, Taywan Taylor was a third round pick. I think that's a pretty good. I think like that's literally the guy, right? Like Taywan from Western.
Yeah, if he goes in the third round, I'm on board with this. But if he goes to Washington in the sixth round, like it's over for him. Like just write him off basically.
Don't do it. I'm hoping teams are smarter than this. Like freaking Carlos Henderson went in the third round 2 years ago. Like Andy Isabella was freaking
dumb. I mean, here's the thing. Like wide receivers will just go – the way that teams evaluate wide receivers are way different from the way that we in the like fantasy football world do. Like DJ Shark went in the second round to the Jaguars last year. Like I didn't even know who that dude was before the draft.
Well, I mean, you're a fish, so that's not really – that's not really a fair thing to say, right?
Like was DJ Shark like a highly rated prospect last year from the fantasy football community?
I think the fantasy community was pretty split. I thought he was really interesting because he made like a ton of big plays as like a runner and a receiver at LSU, but just like didn't have the volume because their offense was literally like the worst run offense in all of college football from like a major program. But yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm hoping that teams are just better and they understand that Isabella like actually makes plays. Like it can't be understated just how good his receiving production was, because like all these other small school guys like that either haven't been drafted as high or like maybe even were drafted as high, like they just weren't as productive as he was, even though it was at UMass. Like if you adjust for like strength of schedule, like he still is probably the most productive receiver in the class.
So last take before we get out of here, Jazz Ferguson, since I brought up TJ Shark, Jazz Ferguson would have been DJ Shark's teammate at LSU, but he violated team rules, got suspended for probably smoking weed. That all we know is that he failed a drug test. I guess we don't know what for. So we went to play at Northwestern State, at crush there, had over 100 receiving yards per game, had over a receiving touchdown per game at FCS Northwestern State. And you know what's kind of crazy? If you go back and look at the history of small school wide receivers, like there are enough success stories that basically you can tell yourself that like playing at an FCS school or playing at a D2 school is fine, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you just want to be able to showcase your talent, right? Like that's why a lot of these guys leave. I mean, even last year, Trey Quinn, I know he went in the seventh round, but like he flashed, I thought, a ton this year before he got hurt with Washington. And that was a guy that couldn't get any burn at LSU, huge surprise. And, you know, goes to play at SMU with Cortland Sutton. And all of a sudden he's like out producing Cortland Sutton, who is like for 2 years was considered to be like a first round player. So yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely something to like transferring out when a situation doesn't benefit you. And Ferguson's another one of these like height, weight, speed guys. Like
he had a better spark score than Boykin.
Yeah, and he's huge. Like again, 6'5", 227, ran a 4.45, jumped pretty high. Just again, sucked in the agilities. Like all these, that's like all these big guys. They're just not at it. Like just how it is when you're big and friggin' tall.
I want the Browns to draft one of these guys: Boykin, Ferguson, Butler. Doesn't matter who. I want them to get Baker one big guy down the field to just go jump at contested balls.
You're not satisfied with the Rashad Perryman?
Perryman, Callaway. I mean, if they're not going to sign Janice back.
Oh, yeah, that's the nuts, right?
No offers to my boy Janice right now, just the CFL and the AAF.
That, like, not to like go on a tangent because this isn't that show, but like I just feel like that's such an indication of just how like entrenched all these people are in their opinions. It's like, well, we didn't like him, so that's why he went so late. And then it's like, well, he produced, but like we still didn't think he was good, so like we're not going to sign him. You know, like it's kind of wild, actually. Like, and I think it speaks to why, like, I think there's a lot of talent that goes through the league just, like, unused, because if you're, like, a day three pick, like, teams are just always looking to replace you. Like, all those guys that the Packers drafted, like, Valdez Scantling and Equanimeous St. Brown, like, those guys might not play at all this year. Like, the Packers go out and draft, like, two new dudes. And it's
just, no,
like,
if so. They get – if they take Noah Font and whoever, you know, Greg Dortch, doesn't even matter.
Right, like, it's just, okay.
It's like, well, they could easily be cut, doesn't matter.
Right.
Packers always have, like, eight wide receivers on their roster who you've never heard of. Trevor Davis. Geronimo Allison. Geronimo Allison was good in college, but, yeah, they always have guys floating around, and they're just ready to replace them whenever.
Yeah, you pretty much needed to like, read our – you pretty much needed to read, like, the old Rotovis stuff just to, like, get through a Packers depth chart.
Yeah. All right, what do you have coming up on the site?
Well, I mean, once we get some updated rankings at NFL Draft Scout, I'm going to have the receiver success model that I alluded to here with Isabella being on top. I want to post that and just have, like, a bunch of other angles that I want to hit at, like, the other positions. I'm like, notably very obsessed with receivers, but, you know, just got out my running back success model, and we're going to have probably something for tight ends at some point also. So just want to keep dissecting this class, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff about it.
All right, we will be back next week with some more takes.